Welcome to my platform, metro.co.uk's new podcast, where we speak to the authors of some of our first person and opinion section's most read articles of the past few years. My platform is all about drawing attention to underheard and underrepresented voices in the media, with guests talking about issues close to their heart. Hosted by me, Jess Austin. I edit the section of Metro that all of our lovely guests submitted their pieces to. As well as being among the most popular pieces, they're also some of my absolute favourites, and I can't wait to speak to the authors more about what inspired their pieces, unhindered by a pesky word count. In this series, we'll be having thought-provoking discussions about issues like the pension gap, pretty privilege, and the problematic side of fake tanning. We'll also be shining a light on people's lived experience, covering adoption, HIV diagnoses, and finding love after loss. This week, we're welcoming Crystal to the podcast. Crystal is a drag queen, having appeared on Series 1 of Drag Race UK. She's also a DJ, writer, and host of the fantastic podcast, The Things That Made Me Queer. She has written for Metro.co.uk many times before, but today we're going to be discussing her article, There Is Nothing Inappropriate About Drag Queens Performing for Children.
Hi! Hi, Jess. So nice to finally see your face.
You too. Yours too. So, you wrote your piece for us originally in July 2022 when the war against drag queens performing to kids in the States was just starting to kick off and it was beginning to spill over to the UK. Obviously, things have changed a lot since then. But back then, when things were first beginning to stir, how did you feel?
I think I just felt, I remember feeling concerned. And I remember seeing a couple of viral tweets and I think a few things that had gone viral on Twitter. And then I remember seeing a performer I know getting their event kind of swarmed by the far right and by protesters. And both of those things happening at the same time made me start to feel a little bit uneasy. And then I did a show for children in Southend at a fairground. And to leave the stage area, we had to walk through the entire fairground. And this dad started screaming at one of my drag artists that I booked that, how dare we be out in public looking like that? There's children around, blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of crystallized the entire problem for me, which was obviously just coming to a bit of a head and really made me want to write that piece.
Yeah, I imagine that must have been quite scary because we do, when it first started happening, we were like, this is an American issue. This is kind of insane. And to see that it's below to the UK must have been quite hard, especially seeing that firsthand.
Yeah, it was really surprising because yeah, like you say, you kind of think of these as like American issues where in the UK, I feel like things tend to stay a little bit more polite or a little bit more online and you're not faced with them face to face quite so much. But yeah, seeing that event getting protested by a far right mob and then experiencing my own experience of it in person, it was a bit of a wake-up call, I guess.
And you've spoken about before about how you didn't really expect this movement of far-right and opposition to come to the UK because we have this history of panto. Is that one of the things that first drew you to drag in the UK as well?
No, actually, I kind of found out about panto separately to drag. It wasn't a thing that led me to it. I didn't grow up here, so panto wasn't part of my childhood. And actually, it was much more kind of club kids and the artistic drag community of East London that really led me to be interested in drag, kind of this punky, political, subversive face of it all. There was a pretty broad public acceptance of the art form because so many people who lived here have had experienced it. You know, I don't think there are quite as many opportunities for drag artists in, say, Canada or the US because you wouldn't necessarily get booked for a corporate event in those places. But here, every single person has grown up with a drag queen. So it's kind of like a familiar character and face, and there's like a presence for it. And it just feels like that makes it all a little bit easier. And I think that goes for things like television as well. You know, when I was just touring in the US and the queens I was working with were like, oh, the UK Drag Race UK seems like such a bigger platform compared to Drag Race US because all of the UK queens are then on chat shows and game shows and just like so much TV. And I think that is because the UK public isn't necessarily afraid of seeing someone who's gender nonconforming because they are used to it and they kind of see it as part of this whole tradition.
Yeah. And before we kind of get into the main direction of your piece, what, obviously, you mentioned club kids. inspired you to get into drag? What makes you love drag? How long have you been performing for?
What inspired me to get into drag? I like attention. That's probably like the easiest way to say it, but the longer answer is that it's incredibly creative. It's really fulfilling. It's fun to entertain people. I really enjoyed that there were so many different layers to it, like beyond just the stagecraft. It was figuring out makeup, figuring out costume. There was so many different elements to it that I really enjoyed exploring. And it felt like it was a real opportunity to like sink my teeth into something and get a lot better at it and keep something you can plug away at and develop your skills. But yeah, I think it does also boil down to like, it feels great to be on stage and have people like what you're doing. And that's like a powerful force as well.
Sadly, since your piece's publication, things have only got worse. You know, you've had proposed drag bills, banning kids from watching shows in the US. You've got this becoming more of a mainstream issue in the UK as well. Why do you think this uproar exists? Is it the depressing rise of homophobia and transphobia, Section 28 reimagined, relying on homophobic tropes? You've talked a lot about manufactured outrage. Why do you think it exists in the first place?
Well, I think it's probably all of the above, to be honest. But the way I see these sort of right-wing pushbacks is religious fundamentalists managing to steer a conversation and then opportunistic politicians finding opportunities to drive wedges into communities and score points with their bases. So I think that there are some people who think that still think that gay people are sinful and that trans people are mentally ill and that drag queens are sinful because they're cross-dressing. And I don't actually think that most Republican lawmakers or people arguing against that actually believe that, but I think that they see it as an opportunity to stoke a culture war that will get them votes and get them reelected. And I think it's really shallow. It's just about getting votes and staying in power and using whatever tools you can to do that. And nothing stokes a political base like a culture war. And so the second that I think people see a crack or an opportunity to shout about protect the children or some other thing that they see as an opportunity to get people outraged, they're going to exploit it to the maximum potential that they can. Fundamentally, that isn't really any different to being homophobic because the outcomes are exactly the same. But I don't necessarily think that all of these people are motivated by homophobia. I think that they're motivated by power and money and electoral greed. Sorry, it's a very pessimistic response.
No, but I think it's pretty spot on. Like, you've been on enough kind of talk shows, you've spoken about this a lot, and you've had people say like the logic, and I say this with air quotes, around the backlashes. It's among the belief that, you know, men shouldn't wear women's clothes, that people should be gender conforming, and that watching drag queens will make kids gay, which there is no logic. But what do you kind of say when you're confronted with these points of views that seem so nonsensical? How do you kind of engage with debate around that? How do you try and make people see your point of view if this is the kind of thing they're believing?
Well, I think there is value in debating some of these points because I think it's easy to derail them once if it stays on that level. The problem is that people who raise these points are often doing it not through a sense of belief, but because of a lower level, like I say, opportunism, looking for attention on, you know, looking for a booking on talk radio or to further their own career as a right-wing demagogue. That said, like if someone's going to say to me, oh, it's wrong for people to dress outside of their gender. I mean, what an outrageous thing to say when even within people we know's lifetimes, a woman wearing a pair of trousers would have felt that way. Like it's ridiculous to me that these people can cling to the idea that clothing has a gender. Where does that leave priests? Where does that leave? What if I go to graduation? Can you wear a gown at graduation? Like clothing does not have a gender. And there's so many examples, even within heteronormative culture, of people not dressing according to their gender. So it's toga parties are a long tradition at at frat parties. Like, is that dressing against your gender because the fabric is loose around your waist? Like, I mean, how do you even begin to define these things? So it's easy to pick apart these arguments, but it's a bit like a hydra. As soon as you cut off one head of it, there's two more going to take their place, and that none of them are in good faith because they all know that these aren't the real issues that they're arguing about.
Exactly. And obviously a lot of the discussion is about kids, but drag wasn't an art form created with children in mind. And you acknowledge that many shows are not kid friendly. Firstly, just to kind of explain to people who haven't been to a drag show, I've been to one of yours and it was fantastic.
Where did you come?
It was the Drag Race UK tour of all the queens. I can't remember where it was. Troxy?
Oh, Troxy.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
It was an amazing night. It was really, really great.
Well, just a quick plug. I'm doing a show at the Troxy produced by myself on July 1st for Pride. So come back again, please.
Yes, love to. And for anyone who hasn't been to a drag show, obviously they're all incredibly different, but what do your shows directed at adults involve?
Oh, all sorts. I do a lot of aerial circus, which is what you would have seen at that show, which is something that, you know, I don't see anything wrong with kids for that. You'd take children to Cirque du Soleil. Some of my acts that are more adult specific, I don't know, I sing a love song to a hot dog and then I deep throat it. And even that, it's like, I don't know, would a kid really know the joke in that? Probably not. You know, I was exposed to lots of things as a child that went right over my head. And you know, the adults are laughing and you don't know why.
That's panto. That literally happens in panto.
I mean, even Disney films, there's jokes written for the adults in the room that the kids don't get. Whatever. I'm not getting fully nude. I'm not shoving things up my butt. I'm not, you know, and that said, there are drag acts that do that. And like, fine, fair enough. My act is generally pretty tame. And I think the biggest thing that people could say about me is that I have a sexualized persona when I'm performing for adults, which is like a kind of confident and menacing kind of bad girl, femme fatale, Bond villain sort of energy. But it's no real different to like a cartoon villain. And that's kind of what my act sort of looks like.
And how does that differ to the performances you put on for kids?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different. So instead of like a skin tight latex cat suit, I'm going to wear a really nice, pretty dress that's floor length. If it's a story time, I'm going to come out and I'm going to read books to kids about being yourself and it's being okay to be different. And then I'll probably ask the kids in the audience if they've ever felt different, and I'll get some of them to come up on stage and tell everyone about the times that they felt different, and everyone gets to feel really supported and like, you know, it's really sweet. One time a little boy came up and was like, I get bullied at school because all my friends like football, but I like rugby. And it's like, oh, some of the concerns of children are just so sweet. And, you know, but it's still like, it's an opportunity for everyone to understand that it's okay to be different. And that's like that's a drag story time in a nutshell. But if it's like a drag show aimed at kids, and I'll probably lip sync something from a musical like Wicked. I'll probably have some big wings on. It'll be like a big joyous romp. And to be honest, there's not really much difference in it between taking your kids to see a musical or taking your kids to see a family-friendly drag show.
You obviously get different things out of performing for different audiences as well. Your shows, I'm sure you get different things out of performing for adults as you do for kids, as you mentioned in your piece. It is a completely different experience.
I didn't get into drag to perform for kids, and it was never something that I like aspired to do. The opportunity came to me because of Drag Race, because there is a bigger audience, people who are interested in drag because of that. And that includes mums with younger kids. And it also includes a lot of kids who found the show on their own and are really interested in it. So that means that there is a demand for drag for younger audiences. It isn't something I set out to do, but it is something that I'm very comfortable doing. And now, having done it many times, it's incredibly rewarding. And it's probably not going to push me creatively, but I do find afterwards, I feel very fulfilled and I feel really hopeful for the future, because I've just seen a whole generation of a whole room full of kids from a really young generation being excited about seeing something different. And that just never would have happened to me when I was a kid. You know, you go to the theater when I was a kid and it was all very heteronormative. So just the idea that these kids are being exposed to other ways of existing and being told it's okay, I think is really positive. And now, of course, there are people who think that that's grooming, which again is, I don't know if you wanted to come onto that later, but it's just so, it's so silly to conflate my existence with the grooming of children, and me saying, hello, I exist and I'm happy to be me is not the same as me trying to convert children. And if you want to talk about conversion, let's talk about religion, but which is, I think, a much more insidious way of warping children's minds. All I'm saying is it's okay to be you. I've never once said to children, it's time that you were gay or you should be gay. That's not my message. My message is be yourself and that's great. And I think that's, I think anyone who fundamentally disagrees with that message isn't being honest with you, because what they disagree with is the idea of a man in a dress. And the other thing I'll say about grooming is if you could groom children into being queer or trans, then you wouldn't have any queer or trans people, because I would have been groomed out of it by an entire childhood being raised on heterosexual content. So my entire life, every piece of media I consumed as a child was heterosexual. And yet here I am, still a gay person. And there were many times in my life as a child that I thought, there's something different about me and I wish I wasn't. And if there was a way for me to have changed that about myself as a kid, I would have done that. You know, it's not within our control to change these innate qualities. And so when people say that we're grooming, what they're saying is they think that gay people are dishonest and that they're doing it out of choice, not out of an innate quality. And they're saying the same thing about trans people. And they think that it's a mental illness or it's not real. And they basically are saying they don't believe in homosexuality or being transgender. I don't know how you argue with that fundamentally. That's a tough thing to argue with. But I'm here to tell you, I exist, I'm real, and nothing I say is going to change your child's gender or sexuality.
No, exactly. And
there, that was a big rant. Sorry.
No, it was, and you say like, when you do these things, you get kids to talk about it and they talk about issues like football and rugby. Like, exactly. And it's brilliant. It's just offering a platform to be able to share their lives, share what's going on with them. Well, I'm sorry you've had to go through that. And you've talked a bit about how, you know, you've been called these names. You said at the beginning, you had this guy come up to you and the other performers you were working with and have a go at you. Well, have a go at you is putting it very mildly, sorry. Like attacking your fundamental, your being. And you've been on the receiving end of homophobia because of this. Do you feel more worried for drag queens like yourself and your friends and peers who are performing nowadays? Does it feel dangerous to perform?
I think something bad will happen and it will be shocking and scary. Currently feel still relatively protected in my East London bubble. And I still feel like queer nightlife spaces are like a bit of a safe space when it comes to that. It feels like a haven. But we've seen in the US how wrong that assumption can be. We thankfully don't have the same problem here with gun violence. So it doesn't feel quite as scary. But, you know, I think on a global level, yes, it's very, very scary. I think on a micro level right now, do I feel scared going to a drag gig? No, but I've seen how far that can slip in the US or in other countries. And so I'm not going to be complacent either.
And just to go back to a slightly earlier discussion, one point you made in your piece, which I think is really interesting, you said, of course, it's important for parents to check a show's level of appropriateness before bringing their kids to a drag brunch, just like they would check the rating of a film before bringing them to any film. Why do you also think the onus, it's not a case of, you know, no kids are going to be exposed to adult performance, like, or a more adult suited performance, like one of yours that is aimed towards adult audiences, without their parents bringing them to it? You know, kids, if they're going to be exposed, they're going to be exposed to drag brunches, which again, they'll be brought to by their parents, or drag queen story time, which as you say, is completely harmless. It is just a lesson where it teaches kids about self-love and also talking about difference and the importance of sharing our feelings. If the parents were to bring, if they're complaining about different levels of performances that are more suited to an adult audience, would you agree that the responsibility is kind of on the parents? They need to look up the ratings before they just bring their kids to any old show and then complain that, oh, actually, this wasn't suited to my kid. It's not on the performers. It's not the performer's responsibility to cater to everyone in the audience. It's also the parents' responsibility to make sure that the content is appropriate for their child.
Absolutely. And I think every drag entertainer has had that experience where they're in the middle of their number, they're walking around maybe at a brunch, and then suddenly there's a child there that you didn't think there was going to be a child there. It wasn't advertised as a family-friendly show. And suddenly you're thinking, oh, I'm already in the middle of my number and I know these things are going to happen. How do I modify this right now so that it's acceptable for the children, but also that it keeps me safe in case someone's filming this and it gets used against me on the internet as some kind of horrible fuel for a culture war? And I've even seen people tweet this video where a drag artist is in the middle of a strip routine and notices a child and then immediately covers back up. And you can see on their face, they're like, oh crap, I didn't know there was a child here and there probably shouldn't have been a child there. And so now they're modifying their performance mid act to suit that child, which I think is unfair on the performer. But also people were using that video as proof of the dangerous nature of drag, where if anything, I think it's the exact opposite of someone saying, oh God, I'm going to be the responsible one here, even though this isn't my problem necessarily. There was also, when we were filming Drag Race, one of the celebrity guests who was a little bit entitled, I won't say any names, but they brought their young daughter onto set. And suddenly there was a message. We're all standing there in judging, you know, someone's about to be eliminated, all of these things. And suddenly there's a message from the producers, oh, so-and-so's child is here, so please keep your language clean. And this is a show we're making for adults. And suddenly we're modifying it for the child in the room. And it felt so entitled and bizarre to me, where why did you bring your child to this setting if you're not prepared for your child to hear me say the F word or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. But I don't like the idea that we should be constantly minimizing or sanitizing our art form for the sensibilities of straight people. It's very frustrating. You know, you've come to us, enjoy what we have to offer. If you don't like it, that's absolutely fine. There's plenty of other entertainment for you, but I don't want to have to, yeah, sanitize myself to keep myself palatable for strangers on the internet who don't really want anything to do with me in the first place.
Other musicals, other artists, other musicians aren't going to have to change their set list because you don't like it. So what makes this different? And there's a whole separate issue as well about, you went on Jeremy Vine to discuss it as well, about mother and baby shows. Why are they, in your mind, just completely, it's not an issue? Like, babies are not going to remember.
Yeah. Well, as you say, I think it is a totally separate issue. And like, the hill, I'm not going to die on the hill of we should have strippers for babies. Like, that's not a hill I want to die on. But I also don't think babies care if someone is naked or not. And I don't think that babies, you know, they're not present. Babies don't have a concept of nudity, gendered clothing, gender at all. So I don't really see it as an issue. I think that mothers deserve opportunities to experience entertainment with new babies. And I think it's great that there's an event that's putting on that service for people. I think that the videos don't look great if you take them out of context. I also don't think that fundamentally anything was going on at those shows that you wouldn't see at Cirque du Soleil. And the fact that people are targeting this event instead of targeting, I saw that they were advertising at the Barbican a mom and baby screening of All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a war movie. And no one's targeting the Barbican with boycotts of how dare they show war movies to babies. The fact that it's being targeted at this event shows that it's just queer phobia and it's nothing to do with protecting children, which is what this always boils down to. The other thing I wanted to say about about this, and it's more of a nuanced conversation, and I have no idea whether it's going to be taken in good faith by the audience listening to this podcast, but a lot of times you'll see, it's the same with burlesque, but in drag, you'll see a drag queen stripping or doing the splits or like quote unquote sexualized performance. But my take on that performance is that it's not sexual. And I don't think anyone in the audience is there watching that performance and being turned on. It's about empowerment. It's about owning your body and owning your own sexuality rather than the purpose being titillation. And I do think that that's a hard nuance to grasp, but, and especially if you just see a short little video, it's hard to tell that, but it's the same with going to a burlesque show. When you go to a burlesque show, most of the audience tends to be women. The performers are mostly women. People aren't there getting off on the performances. They're all celebrating the feeling of empowerment that you can get by being on stage and owning your own body. And I think that's a nuance that's often missed in these conversations. And so people are like, they're stripping for babies. No, there's mums watching someone fierce doing something really empowering and finding joy within that. And no one's there getting sexual kicks. They're getting empowerment kicks. And I think that's a hard distinction to make, but I think it is relevant. I'm not here to defend strippers for babies.
Well, it sounds pretty much like that's the hill you're going to die at. No. Top line, Crystal defends strippers for babies.
Please don't do that to me, Jess.
So one message you would like listeners to take home?
You know, one of the reasons I like writing for Metro is that it does actually feel like it's getting outside of my echo chamber. And I feel like I'm reaching some people who aren't necessarily already in full agreement with me. That said, it also leads to a lot of nasty comments. And, you know, I was looking today at the comment section on this piece that we're discussing, and there were like 30 comments that have been deleted because they didn't meet the community guidelines. And I remember at the time reading and being like, oh, wow, I've just been called a pedo and a groomer loads. So it's hard to know who I'm talking to when something like this gets made. And I just hope that the people listening who are a little bit on the fence or who are pro gay rights and trans rights, but have seen some videos that they think, oh, that's going a little bit too far. I hope that they take what I'm saying and use it to think critically about what the agenda that's being pushed is when people try and make these inflammatory culture war issues when they try and stoke these culture war issues. And instead of thinking, oh, maybe the answer is to ban drag queens or to enforce dressing according to your sex assigned at birth, maybe we should think more about just letting people live. And you know what? There's going to be more drag acts that happen in front of children that don't look great. And there's always going to be performances that you think, ooh, that was too far or that was not the right audience for that. And that's going to happen, but that does not mean that the entire community needs to be demonized. Mistakes happen. And, you know, Catholic priests are still allowed to exist, and they have a much dodgier track record than drag queens. So until you're willing to ban Catholic priests, please stay away from drag queens. That's my message.
That's a hell of a dying one. I think you made some really interesting points. And I think, you know, there will always be people online that love to hate, that is their reason of living, and no well-informed debate from people actually with lived experience of the issue being talked about is going to change their minds. But there are people who I think just lack the insight, they haven't spoken to anyone who's got lived experience of this. They've seen a video online and they go, that's really inappropriate for kids. But what they're not seeing is the fact that maybe that show wasn't marketed for kids, that performer was taken completely unawares, that was not the right performance for kids to go, and it was never advertised as such. And then you've also got, you know, people who assume that every drag performance is going to be like something they see on Drag Race, or it's going to be like something they've seen online, and they're going, well, that's not appropriate for kids, without knowing that that's actually not what a performance for kids is going to be like, that drag for adults and drag for kids is they're completely separate realms. You also, like you say, it's not why you signed up to do drag. It's something that you do because you find it fulfilling, but it's not your reason for doing drag. And you will have queens who who won't do it in the first, like they won't do it. And you have queens that will, and it's completely different. I think hopefully this speaking to you about your experience will help shine a light on that. The really simple point is that they're really different. Like, it's really different.
Yeah. And the next time you see a video of a drag queen performing and it's intended to fuel outrage, just ask yourself, why am I seeing this video? Who's benefiting from me seeing this video? Why has it been pushed at me? Why am I seeing an isolated event and being told to condemn an entire community off the base of one thing that happened? It's, you know, use some critical thinking and take a minute before you cast loads of judgment over an entire section of the population over the actions of one person, because that's bigotry. I mean, it's the exact same arguments that we've had since the 70s, when gay people started becoming more visible and gay rights became a topic of conversation. The language about the pushback of that was all about protecting children and saving kids from groomers. And Margaret Thatcher is saying children are being taught they have an inalienable right to be gay. And that exact same language is now being wheeled out again about trans people. And it's just absurd. And if you truly care about protecting children, then stop voting for the Tories and start donating some money to social services. If protecting children is your main interest, there's lots of ways to do that. Demonizing queer people is not going to help your children.
Thank you, Crystal. Thanks for listening to my platform and to Crystal's experience. You can find Crystal on social media under Crystal Will See You. Please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps people to find the podcast. Our main aim with this podcast is to give a platform to underheard voices, offering a human first story to accompany some of the most prevalent topics in the news. We'd love to hear if Crystal's story helped shape your view. If so, please let us know on Twitter at Metro Opinion or by email at platform@metro.co.uk. My platform is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. I'm Jess Austin. Thanks for listening.